Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we'll look ahead to the Champions League final between Liverpool and Real Madrid and ask who will win the battle between Vinicius Jr. and Trent Alexander-Arnold. We'll discuss Roma's win in the Europa Conference League final and what Jose Mourinho could do as their manager in the future, as well as what happens next at Paris Saint-Germain after Kylian Mbappe's huge new contract. We'll be introduced to Erik ten Hag as Manchester United boss and look ahead to the Championship playoff final. This is The Game. Hello again, welcome back to The Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Wisencroft alongside Ian Hawkey and Alison Rudd with one huge game, one final hurdle of the season to leap over, the Champions League final. The end is in sight. Saturday's Paris showpiece, of course, between Liverpool and Real Madrid. It's a repeat of the final 4 years ago in Kiev, which Madrid won 3-1. Mo Salah, firstly, let's get to him before we even talk about that match. He says he's going to stay next season. His contract until June 2023. He hasn't, though, committed to a contract beyond them. So, Alison Rudd, I'll start with you. Is it to be one final year of Mo Salah?
Well, we should be very grateful if it is one final year. I don't think it necessarily is, though. I mean, I think his agent would slap him around the face if he started saying things like, I'm staying beyond the end of my contract, because that's bad negotiation, isn't it? Reminds me a lot of my mother, who's just bid on a house and bid £25,000 over the asking price because she thought that's what you did. I mean, ridiculous. So no, they have to. Yeah, bane of my life. Anyway, I think this is as much as Mo Salah can say, given all the things he's told not to say, but given that he's been a little bit obtuse and mysterious prior to this statement, I think it is positive. It shouldn't only, it's bizarre. If you were just arriving from the world of business, had never taken any notice of football, you'd think it was very peculiar that someone staying for the length of their contract was considered headline news. But that's the way football is. He won't be allowed to say more. I think, honestly, I'm tired of the constant will they, won't they for all the big stars at any club. Let's just enjoy the time they're given. On paper, squeeze as much out of them as possible. They have very short careers. It all whizzes past so quickly. Before you know it, we'll be talking about Mo Salah being a bit old, a bit slow, not what he was. So the window between that, sort of hoping he extends his contract and Liverpool can afford it and everyone's happy, the money men are happy, that Mo Salah is happy, his agent is happy, his family are happy, that moment, and everyone claiming that he's past it. You know, that will go by in the flash of an eye. So let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy it. If it is the final season, I have no reason to think why wouldn't. Say they win the Champions League and then they keep progressing as they are and being innovative, which they are. Wouldn't you be tempted, if you're Mo Salah, to think, well, then we really can win the title next season, and I want to stay with a club that is feared in Europe. So I'm not really sure where he would go if it wasn't purely about the money. I'm not worried about whether it's a year or not. Let's enjoy the year.
Oh, well, it might just be one more game, Alison. That's the thing. With a year left on your deal,
I trust what he says. Hugh.
Okay. All right. The thing is, at the weekend, he could play a potential suitor. Remember, they've missed out Real Madrid on Kylian Mbappe. Mo Salah signing could go a long way to appeasing the disappointed fans. That's all I'm going to say at this point in time, okay? The two big, huge European giants meeting in the final at the weekend. Some saying, Ian, that Liverpool are looking a little bit tired in their last couple of games. Are Madrid in better shape, do you think?
Yes, in the sense that their schedule over the last couple of weeks has been kinder. You know, they won the league, and so they've had their feet up, so to speak, since that happened. And everyone is reported fit. So, you know, that's something. Although I did notice Gareth Bale doing some extra training on Tuesday. But frankly, that's not really relevant because Gareth
Bale... Was he practicing overhead kicks? Then it might be relevant.
No, he was doing his usual thing of sort of looking ornamental, which is, I'm afraid, his role now. It's quite an expensive ornament, but, you know. Yes, and Eden Hazard, the other forgotten man, is also fit, apparently. But again, that's probably a technicality because I don't think we'll see much of him either. So, yeah, I mean, you know, they are in good shape. The elephant in the room really is whether the Mbappe snub has had is a blow to morale. And I mean, I can't really imagine that in the dressing room they've all got long faces because of that. But, you know, there's a sort of, there is a cloud over the place because of that.
Alison, do you read anything to people saying that Liverpool have been tired over the past couple of games?
No, you see, I would turn that on its head and say they've been playing in quarters and deliberately pacing themselves so that come Saturday night they're not tired. You know, there's no point going hell for leather over 90 minutes in every match if you can try and manage it better than that. And I think that's what they've been doing. This was the first big lesson that Klopp learnt when he arrived here. He said, we can't play our heavy metal football for every minute of every game. We will become exhausted. He's been working ever since to make sure they maintain their philosophy, personality and style of play, but not feeling the need to have the accelerator, you know, flat on the floor for the whole season. So I think it's anticipation of how draining it is means they've gone down a few gears in the last few games and turned it on when they've needed to. And that means they will look as fresh as daisies when they're in the Stade de France.
Okay. All right. I'll take your word for it. Let's go to exactly where the game might be won and lost, some of the key battles. Ian, you've written in the Times about the threat of Real Madrid's Rodrigo, who has popped up with a couple of big goals in the Champions League knockout stages. Why him?
There's a big caveat here. We're only likely to see Rodrigo if Liverpool have a lead. You know, he really is. He's the definition of super sub, or has been recently. I think it's unlikely he'll start, but, you know, he has had this sort of magic touch coming off the bench in the last two rounds. And he is good at that. You know, he picks up on a game quickly off the bench. So he's become a specialist at that, which is, you know, probably not the role he wants, but, he's a very handy person to bring on. But as I say, we're only really likely to see him if Madrid are trailing, as they have been in every single knockout round, and, you know, and to change the pace of things and mount another comeback, which they've been very good at. But yeah, I mean, yeah, he's an interesting player. Vinicius is much the more threatening player as a winger, and I think he's Vinicius against Trent is obviously a big individual duel. It was one that Vinicius won last year when Madrid knocked Liverpool out in the quarterfinals, and he's had a terrific season, Vinicius, and he's a really thrilling player to watch, which is he's one of the best reasons to watch Real Madrid now, actually.
Oh, I agree with you, Ian, completely. There's a YouTube video called 50 plus players humiliated by Vinicius Junior. He just does that. He doesn't necessarily have to be at it throughout a match, but he will always turn it on at least one moment and be very lethal. I if I was in charge of preparing the Liverpool team, I would be spending a lot of time looking at that YouTube video. And thinking, we have to do something here.
And does Trent feature in the video?
probably, because players can do well and prepare and so on, but there'll always be a moment. I think that's why he's so dangerous, is he can look like he's having a quiet game and people will use the word shackled, which is what they do when someone's a winger. But there's always a moment, isn't there? I think. I mean, you've probably seen him in action more. Well, definitely seen him in action more than me. Yeah. But don't you find even when he's having a so-called quiet game, he'll suddenly spurt through?
Yeah, absolutely. You're dead right. You're dead right. And he really has grown this season. He used to be, I wouldn't say a joke, but there was a thing around Vinicius that, yeah, he would have one of these dazzling runs, super fast, dribble round people, and the finish would always be a disappointment. And that has really transformed. He's become quite a composed, cool finisher. So he's twice the player he was a year ago.
Didn't Karim Benzema have to deny telling his teammates not to pass to him? Wasn't that one of the key things in his laughing stock sort of, repertoire?
Yes, it was. And it was difficult for Benzema to deny because there was footage of Benzema saying to a teammate, don't pass to Vinicius. It's as if he's playing for the other side. So, yeah.
Yeah. So things have turned around for him. But he's only
21, which is, of course he's growing as a player and learning. He's going to get better, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it will be interesting to see where he is when he's 25. There's a high chance we'll be talking about him as a Ballon d'Or candidate. But, he is a winger. There's also a chance that we might be saying, oh, Vinicius, he got found out in 2023 or something.
The thing is, I think Vinicius versus Alexander-Arnold down what's Liverpool's right, if you like, Real Madrid's left. And then, of course, the big two going head-to-head, Karim Benzema and Virgil van Dijk. For me, that area coming in from Real Madrid's left-hand side, I think that's where the game's going to be won, lost, really. Whoever out of those two, if you like, the Real Madrid two or the Liverpool two, play the best, dominate the other, they will go on to win the game. Does anyone disagree or agree very strongly? I think I'll go down that road. Who really agrees with what I've had to say?
Well, if I can paraphrase what you've said. I mean, I agree they're the key areas on the pitch, but I think it's about concentration. So I think to stop Real Madrid, Liverpool have to be, and they're not always at full concentration throughout the game, because I think Real Madrid have players that can take advantage of those moments when there's just a lapse in concentration. And I think Benzema's probably one of the world's best at that. He's one of those players who, if you're watching Real Madrid live, which I've been lucky enough to do, you sometimes forget Benzema's there. He doesn't do a lot of harrying or running around. He does a lot of watching and absorbing what's going on and waiting for the right moment to pounce. He's a hunter. And he will spot a gap or someone being out of position or someone being distracted by something, and he will act then. He's very good at sort of picking a weak spot. I think that requires someone like Virgil van Dijk to just be on it the whole time, aware that even when he's not near him, he needs to have eyes in the back of his head. Where's he going to run to? What's he planning? I just think Benzema's really cunning like that. So if that's what you really mean, Hugh, then I would agree with you.
Alisson's exactly right. And, he's got a whole showreel for this, much of it involving Lloris Karius. But I think, Hugh, you're right. You've identified a key area, but deeper than Vinicius as well. That is the flank where somebody from Real Madrid has got to look after Salah. And Fellaini Mendy will be at left back, and there's quite a big sort of experience difference there between Salah and Mendy. Vinicius is going to have to also be slightly conscious of getting in Salah's way when Liverpool counter quickly. So, that's two relatively young players.
It's interesting to say that, because I don't think Salah's form has been great. And if you look at the right back area for Real Madrid and you look at Luis Diaz's form, I'd see that area as more key in terms of Real Madrid's fullbacks. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dani Carvajal is you know, has been a great servant for Madrid. He's a terrific sort of warrior, but he's, I think this, he would not say that this has been his best season. And I think probably overall, he's on the way down from his peak. So yeah, I absolutely agree. That's, I think Madrid would be concerned about Diaz on that side, yeah.
All right, I need to get your assessments next. Maybe I'll give mine as well about how I think the game will go, but I'm going to start with you guys. Ian, I'll start with you on this. How do you think this match will pan out? Yes, I'm asking you to look deep into the crystal ball.
I think Liverpool have to be favourites, and I think there will be periods where they really do alarm Madrid, you know, with their power, their speed, their press. And I think they will win the Champions League final by one goal.
Okay, all right. Ali, what do you think about the game itself? What do you think the process will be here? Do you think Liverpool will come out and dominate Real Madrid, or do you expect it to be, particularly in the first half, you know, one of those exciting end-to-end open Champions League games that we've had at times involving Real Madrid this season?
Who knows? I expect Liverpool to come out of the blocks. Like, they haven't done a lot recently, but usually do when it's a big game. Come out of the blocks, blitz Real Madrid, and I have seen Real Madrid not cope with that very well at times. So I expect Liverpool to take the lead. I then expect Real Madrid to do what they seem to do a lot in Europe, which is then suddenly make a stunning comeback. I don't think Liverpool will be cowed by that. They will be expecting it, even if they concede. And I think the game will begin and end with Liverpool in the ascendancy, and Real Madrid will think they can, I don't know, exploit some sort of lull in proceedings. It's hard to sort of separate what I want to happen and what I genuinely think will happen. But I'm full of admiration for Real Madrid and how they've got to the final. I think they've got to the final in a more romantic and exciting way. If I was neutral, I might want Real Madrid to win it, I think, because I think the narrative of them getting there has been astonishing. And they've got a lot of players that are just so likeable and admirable. I don't know, there's something incredibly fatalistic about the way they play. And I and Jurgen Klopp, for all his affability and joking and just being looking like, you know, totally relaxed chap. He's not. I think, you know, he's got neuroscientists in. He's going down every avenue to look at the minutiae of how you do this. I think that approach will trump this more sort of fatalistic, we've got what it takes, we're Real Madrid, it'll happen.
For me, I think it will come down to massively the central midfield area. If Fabinho makes it, that is huge for Liverpool in terms of controlling the game, because you look at some of those really experienced heads at Real Madrid, Toni Kroos, of course, you've got Luka Modric in there, Casemiro, they've been there, they've done it all before, they've got the T-shirt, but also those that have, I think, added energy in their midfield, Valverde and especially Camavinga off the bench in these knockout games in the Champions League, which have added an extra dimension for Real Madrid. But you do get the point, you do get the feeling that if Liverpool's central midfield area allows Real Madrid to take control of the game, it could be a long evening. I'm not going to say it's going to be a chastening evening or anything like that, but you don't want Real Madrid to have control at any time. You don't want to feel like, and I know Liverpool can do it, they can break on teams, they can counter, they can score goals for fun, and I know that could change things as well, which makes it an even more intriguing contest in many ways. But I wouldn't want to see, if I was a Liverpool fan, the likes of Luka Modric really settling into a groove in this game. I think if you allow them to, they can hurt you. What do you think about the central midfield area in this game, Ian?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think if you asked Carlo Ancelotti or, you know, any of his predecessors, they would probably privately say, oh, I wish we had Toni Kroos and Casemiro of 2 years ago. I think those two, again, are probably, you know, they're not quite as energetic and mobile as they used to be. The surprising thing is that Modric, who is a great deal older than both of them, is, as I think we've said most weeks on this podcast, immortal. You know, he is
You know, he has been magnificent in the Champions League. And yes, if Modric starts to take control, which he won't do for 90 minutes, but yeah, that would be a very worrying sign for Liverpool.
I think it's going to be a great game. Great Champions League final. Great way to end the season. Alisson, you're right. You know, if I were a neutral in this, which I am, obviously, clearly, you know, I would want Real Madrid to win as well. Just because of... What do you mean? You know, I'm a complete neutral in this game. You are fortunate enough, lucky enough, to be going to Paris to see this game as a fan. We've got to talk about which shirt selection you're going to go for and what are your feelings as a fan going to this game. You know, you spoke about your head and your heart. Tell us all about your heart.
Oh, well, my heart means I sometimes get this thing where there's a game I have to be at as a fan. And because of my job, I can't often act upon it. But this was one of those games. And thank goodness I had that feeling because I booked my Eurostar tickets before Liverpool reached the final. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to go. I was at the League Managers Association dinner on Tuesday night, and I met someone who's given back two tickets to the final because he can't get from this island to the continent. He can't physically get there. Every route is full. He's not going to swim. He's not going to swim.
I know we've had arguments with the EU, but are they still allowing cars to go from the UK to France, or is that stopped?
They're full.
Oh, wow.
You can't. I mean, I know people who are taking vehicles they don't need and don't want just to get on the... because that was their only route, and now that route's full. So unless you're prepared to charter a private plane, it's like, if you've left it too late, you've left it too late. So... I mean, everyone who's there supporting Liverpool who lives in Britain will have been ingenious about how they get there. Mm. So I don't know what I've done if I'd waited for it to be definite that Liverpool were in the final. And I'm very fortunate that I've got some friends who have a flat in Paris and they're letting me stay in their flat. So that means I don't have to pay the astonishing rates they are now charging. That all the hotels are asking for you to stay two nights and not one night, even if you don't need two nights. And they've put up their... Everyone does this. I mean, Liverpool, the city, do that when there's a Champions League game on. They put the prices on by about 800%. So it's just turning into this absolute joke to get there. And that's even before you can be sure you've got a ticket. I mean, it's just like like a sort of a job in itself. It's, you know, it's like a holy grail situation. It's just been obsessing me for weeks and weeks and weeks. But I am going as a fan. I head off on Friday, come back on Sunday. I'll be talking to you on the podcast on Monday, and I'll probably be unbearable.
What does it mean? I know this will sound like a strange question. It's a Champions League final. Every football fan, I imagine, one day wants to win it if they haven't, and if they already have, wants to win as many as possible. But Liverpool have been so dominant recently. It is such a great period for Liverpool. They have won a Champions League very, very recently. They don't need to win this Champions League final, I think, for people to feel like they have been a brilliant side. As a fan... You of course went through those periods where you weren't winning loads of trophies, and maybe you think, when will be the next one? And maybe that means you're absolutely desperate. But let's put it into this context. If you lose that Champions League final, you will still walk away from that match. I mean, I'm not going to say feeling delighted, but safe in the knowledge that Liverpool will continue to be one of the best clubs in football. Or would you feel a bit like a Tottenham fan when you beat them a few years ago in that, oh my word, we lost the Champions League final, heartbroken, this may never happen again, we may never be here again. How would you feel?
No, I wouldn't think, oh, we'll never be here again. No, absolutely
entitlement.
Not.
Entitlement, all right.
No, that's just having faith and confidence in your manager and the way the club's set up at the moment. No, I wouldn't. But I would be very sad if Liverpool lost and they played disappointingly. I mean, that would be the thing. If it's a thrilling game, it's a thrilling game. Both teams play the best they can play, and it just turns out that Real Madrid edge it. I'm not going to be distraught. I'll be more upset if it's just, you know, for some reason it doesn't come together and we just don't turn up and play the football that we can play. You just used the word entitled, Hugh, and I actually think that's really fair of you to say that, because my childhood was all about, really, most of the time, it was about Liverpool in Europe. I didn't really care too much about domestic football. It was all about Europe and listening to games on the radio when I'd been told to go to bed. So I'd put the radio on and put the covers over my head and listen to commentary from, you know, what seemed like really exotic locations, although now I'm grown up, I realize they're not. But, you know, just feeling, there's just something just about the way you're brought up. It's just, that's at the heart of my love for Liverpool, is that sense of showing off Liverpool to the rest of Europe. Look at us. It's an innate thing. I mean, I didn't question it when I was young. So, and I don't know, but I think probably a lot of fans, certainly of my vintage, would feel the same way. It just seems to, I wouldn't say it matters more than it would to someone else, but it matters differently. The FA Cup final, you know, I didn't care, really. Not really. But this I really care about.
Okay. Finally, I don't know if I got an answer to this. What will the shirt selection be for the weekend?
Oh, I haven't decided yet. No, I've got my famous, I have, as you know, I own the shirt that Steven Gerrard wore the night he was made captain by Liverpool. And that was given to me as a birthday present by Gerard Houllier. And I've never washed it, so it still has magical powers. That is a possibility because it's gone with me to other European finals, but it's not always been a successful shirt. I've also got a shirt I put on, although I say I didn't care too much, I did wear it for the FA Cup final, the shirt that I wore when I played at Anfield. So it's got my name on the back. And I've always thought I wanted to be invisible, really, when I go to a game. I don't really want to say, look at me, it's Alison Rudd in match. I didn't want to do that. But you know, it's been lucky this season. So maybe, I don't know. It's between those two, I think. Or maybe one of my Crown Paints retros. Okay. I haven't decided yet.
Well, it's all important, Alison. Get it wrong.
I know.
Get it wrong.
It's very serious. And,
you know, it could sway the result. You know how it goes.
I might take several.
Exactly. Last minute decision as you bolt out the door for the game. Yep. Alison Rudd, listen, good luck with the Champions League final this weekend. I mean that sincerely. We want you to be joining us on Monday with tears of joy rather than disappointment, okay? And we're going to reflect, of course we will, on Monday on that big Champions League final between Liverpool and Real Madrid. You know I love a prediction. Ian Hawkey, what score?
2-1 Liverpool.
Alison?
4-3 Liverpool.
Wow. So the greatest Champions League final of all time, probably.
Why not?
I am going to go 4-1 Liverpool. I've had this feeling in the pit of my stomach for a long time that Liverpool will show their absolute best against Real Madrid, and some of the older, more creaking Real Madrid players will finally succumb. So anyway, we'll see what happens. I'm also putting a bit of money on Gareth Bale winner, because that's just what he does. So we'll see if he comes off the bench right at the death in extra time as well. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about European football, big stories at both Roma and PSG. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Roma won their first major European trophy this week by beating Feyenoord in the inaugural Europa Conference League final in Albania. The club's first European trophy, as I say, their first since 2008 in any shape or form. And it comes in Jose Mourinho's first season as their manager. I found this stat to be quite strange. Obviously, it's the first Europa Conference League final, but officially, he is the first manager to win all of UEFA's major European trophies as well. They finished sixth in Serie A in the league, 23 points behind the leaders. Jose Mourinho's teams have gone 423 minutes since conceding a goal in major European finals over several clubs, of course. Ian, where does this rank amongst Jose Mourinho's great achievements? One thing, it didn't irk me at the end of the game. I don't want to be a Jose Mourinho hater, but you had all these Roma fans, you know, in tears about it being their first European trophy and it's their first since 2008. And you had Jose Mourinho running around holding the number five in the air because it was all about his five. And I found that really strange, actually, because he's meant to be Roma through and through these days. That's what he tells us. So it should have been about the club, but it felt like it was more about him. Anyway, where did you think it ranked amongst his great achievements?
Certainly not at the very top, because we'll have a perspective on the Conference League after a few years, but you are calling it a major trophy, which it technically is, but it is the third tier competition in Europe. I'm sorry to throw a dampener on the whole thing. And also, Jose Mourinho has achieved some really great things, as Jose Mourinho was eager to point out last night. Porto winning the Champions League, it looks more and more astonishing that the more time goes on. You know, that's it's the only club from outside the big four leagues this century to win a Champions League. Inter winning the Champions League was quite something. And in fact, his last European trophy, Hugh, you might be able to put a perspective on this, was one with Manchester United.
It was, yes. Remember them?
Yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe behind Porto and Inter, because as you say, it's been a long time for Roma, but it is the Conference League.
Listen, I got absolutely slammed for saying I don't think the Europa Conference League is a major European trophy. This is a while back, actually, about a month ago, on social media. And I factored in many things. I said, I think a competition needs history as well for us to care about it a little bit more. And obviously, you know, the Conference League just can't have that yet. It's in its first year. But I also, you know, I offered the question, well, if UEFA bring in a fourth tier European competition and a fifth tier, would they also be major European trophies? I mean, I don't know how far down the line you go with major trophies or whether it matters, because ultimately, you know, the team that wins the championship or wins the National League, you know, they put in a lot of hard work. They've played the best in their respective, you know, division, if you like, or competition or tournament, and they've won it and it means a lot to them. So they're all major in a way. Again, I may be sort of taking away from Roma's achievements here. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that because, again, if you watch those pictures last night and you saw what it meant to the players in tears and the fans as well. And by the way, there should have been many, many more fans in that stadium. That's another story. That I think Roma fans are looking to a bright future with Jose Mourinho, who has committed his future. He said he is going to be staying with Roma. How big is that for the club, Ian?
It's a big deal. And he has done what it said on the packet. You know, he was presented to Roma as born winner, Jose Mourinho. And of course, he hasn't won much in the last 5 years. But, you know, he's done that. He's taken them over a really important long barrier by winning a trophy. He's the best paid manager in Italy. And it has been pointed out by a lot of Italians that perhaps the best paid manager in Italy should be higher than sixth in Serie A. So, you know, it has been a mixed first season. This makes it a successful first season. And he is staying, which means there will be all sorts of squabbling with the board about signings over the summer. That's to be guaranteed. But, you know, the good things he's done, and a little shout out here for, you know, for the English brigade at Roma. I mean, Tammy Abraham has been a massive success, and Mourinho's got a lot to do with that. Man of the match last night, Chris Smalling.
Yes.
Which was nice.
Smaldini, as they call him.
Ian, why do you think that someone like Tammy Abraham not good enough for a top six team in England, did very well when he was on loan in the Championship, and is doing very well in Serie A. Are we to conclude that Serie A is just overall a peg down on what you get week in, week out in the Premier League, and he's just not quite tough enough for it?
I'd agree with you that Serie A is significantly less competitive than the Premier League at the moment. I'd say that the Tammy Abraham story is a moving story. You know, how old is he? He's still in his early 20s, isn't he? So I think he's got better than he was when he was in the Championship, and probably better than he was a year ago when he was, you know, way down the pecking order at Chelsea. And you know, there are aspects of his game you can really admire and think, yes, perhaps they've come on because there's a little bit more time on the ball in a typical Serie A match and that sort of thing. So, I mean, I think he's on the up as well as being in perhaps a less competitive league.
But Romelu Lukaku was dominant in Serie A and looks lost a lot of the time in the Premier League.
Yes, good evidence, yes.
I grew up being told and then watching for myself, you know, if you want to watch the best, the very best defenders, the very best defensive systems, you watch Italian football. They know how to defend. And yet, if you're a striker, you're going to have a lot of fun in Italy. You're not going to have a lot of fun in England.
Times have certainly changed since young Alison was watching football. And Romelu Lukaku, Edin Dzeko. You know, there are goal scorers who are thriving there, who have thrived there, who might not thrive so much in the Premier League. That's for sure. I think probably the sort of watermark of Italian defending is not what it was. It's also harder to be a defender now because the rules have changed since very young Alisson was watching Serie A.
I just wonder what sort of steps forward Jose Mourinho could make. I know it will come down to the transfer window as well, but there are some big clubs in Italy. I would find it really sensational if Roma can break into that Champions League once again and challenge for the title. I mean, the title, you know, AC Milan won it this year. You sometimes feel with Italy that it's up for grabs. Juventus were fourth. They haven't had a great time in the last couple of years. But I don't know if you could you see what would it take for Roma to get in the conversation for the title, do you think, Ian? Could Jose do it?
I totally agree with you. I think anyone and a lot of managers, out-of-work managers, are thinking that this looks like a winnable league, you know, for a club in the top six or seven. Mourinho's big complaint this season is that he's had a workable first 11 and then not much beyond that. I think even the current first 11, it's hard to see them competing with Inter, say, who, you know, have a better squad. But I think if they choose widely, perhaps get a bit more creativity in midfield. Yeah, they absolutely should be at least in the top four. I think if they're not in the top four by this time next year, then, and Jose Mourinho is still there, which is always a question mark, he will have fallen short.
Okay, we'll see how things pan out with Roma. But congratulations to Roma fans for that first trophy since 2008, winning the inaugural Europa Conference League. And congratulations to France forward Kylian Mbappe, who is now richer than rich. He has agreed to stay at Paris Saint-Germain. He's turned down a move to Real Madrid. He extends his contract by 3 years with the French champion. And it's reported that he will now earn £42.5 million a year in addition to a bonus of £153 million for staying at PSG, where he now, it's reported, also has 100% control of his image rights. That, by the way, is not even the biggest contract ever handed out. So, you know, Lionel Messi has earned more previously at Barcelona, not earning as much as Mbappe right now at PSG. I was stunned by this. I couldn't think of a real reason to stay at Paris Saint-Germain. I know he's spoken about being French. Obviously, that's a big one for Kylian Mbappe, and wanting to achieve great things with PSG. Yes, I get it. But it might have boiled down to money. What do you think, Ian?
I think that money was a factor. And I do think genuinely there were pressures from the kind of sources that might have surprised Mbappe. I think it's an exaggeration to say it became a matter of state, but that, you know, the whole, you know, this is for France narrative that went around it. I do think that that the relationship between Qatar, from where PSG is funded, and France was slightly brought to bear on the whole thing, and it was very, very important, not just for Paris Saint-Germain, but for Qatar, where the World Cup is going to be hosted, that one of their figureheads is going to be in Qatar as a PSG employee. But yes, clearly the money also had a role, and I think there is a legacy argument for Mbappe. You know, players do care about their legacy; they look after it, and if Mbappe can be the figure who delivers a first European Cup to Paris Saint-Germain and then a few more, you know, so he becomes, I don't know, like the Alfredo Di Stefano of PSG's history, I think that probably does count for something. And it's viable. It's possible that he could do that.
Alison, I've got to ask you about this contract, or at least what's being reported, that the contract gave Kylian Mbappe the power to influence transfers, sack the club's manager, appoint the sporting director of his choice. He says he won't go above the role of a footballer. But I wonder what you thought even these reports and this contract say about where football's heading.
Well, this is almost funny, because PSG are the architects of the reasons why they will never be the leading club in Europe. You have a collection of players who, because PSG are nouveau riche, therefore they have to attract players with more money than another club might need to attract them. So you have a lot of spoilt brats basically playing for you who have been courted. And I don't know how much of the leaked stuff about his contract is true, but let's assume that half of it is too much. If you blur the boundaries of what your role is as a player and what your role is as someone who has influence at the club, it's not going to work. It really is not going to work. You know, it's just ridiculous. They will never succeed while they feel they have to pander to the agents and personalities of these people. It's just ridiculous. And that's why they'll never be successful. Even if what Ian was talking about, legacy and so on, and that might all be true. Just think about what that dressing room will look like, what the new manager will be thinking, successive new managers will be thinking. They all leave. Managers all leave PSG, just absolutely relieved to get out of there, because it's just so difficult to do the job properly. The clubs that are successful are the ones where, yes, you have players with egos and greedy agents and entourages that are too big, but it's really clear who's in charge and that there's a clear philosophy at the club and a plan for the future. And that plan isn't just let's collect as many star names as possible and pay over the odds for them, and if they want extra power written into their deals, they can have it. Look at Liverpool, for example. There is this avuncular image, but it's very clear, you know, who the father figure is. You know, some people don't like the way Klopp hugs everybody, but actually that's a very good way of letting people know the hierarchy. They're sort of his children, they listen to him, he's in charge. There can be lots of love and so on, but there's a hierarchy there, and no player is bigger than the club. As soon as you have a player who sounds bigger than the club, that doesn't help morale, camaraderie, the intangibles you need to be a great team and work together. So they've been crowing about it and showing off about the fact that they've got one up on Real Madrid. But actually, the winner is Real Madrid.
Interesting. Very interesting, Alison Rudd. Listen, there is a lot going on at Paris Saint-Germain. Leonardo, Mauricio Pochettino, Ian Hawkey, are there changes that have been brought about by Kylian Mbappe's contract, either on the horizon or have happened already?
if Kylian Mbappe really is the new chief executive, which we've been led to believe, he hasn't done a very good job so far. They can't attract the manager they want. They've just waved goodbye to the, you know, the best supplier of long passes, which is what Mbappe lives on, Angel Di Maria. So I think he might resign as chief executive quite quickly. The Pochettino situation is very interesting. It is assumed that he will go. It's been assumed for the best part of a year he will go. But Mbappe has quite a good relationship with him. So, you know, that will be quite interesting to see what happens. Their ideal choice would be Zinedine Zidane, who's not straining at the leash to join them. And beyond that, they're slightly scrabbling around, really, for a new manager. Leonardo was always going to leave. He's had quite an abrasive relationship with players, managers, and so on. So that will be a significant difference, I think. And I think possibly we will see fewer of the symptoms that Alisson described of this slightly chaotic, unbalanced hierarchy. The really interesting one will be Neymar. Mm. You know, whether Neymar now falls into line under the Mbappe regime, as we have to call it, or, you know, or starts feeling he wants to go somewhere else, or starts feeling as if he's being pushed somewhere else. I'm not sure if he's got that many choices of places to go to, you know, to be at the same sort of elite level. But yeah, that the change in the hierarchy, as far as it affects Neymar, is I think it's going to be an interesting story for the next few months.
Absolutely, it is. Ian Hawkey, Alison Rudd, thank you for joining me on the Game Podcast. There is more still to come. We'll be talking about the Championship playoff final. Once again, Alison, good luck with that Champions League final. Hope the nerves are okay this weekend. Don't drink too much. You know, we know what you like, all right? All right? Just behave yourself. And Ian, enjoy the final too. Absolutely. I'll speak to you both on Monday. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Let's talk Manchester United next, as Erik ten Hag is unveiled at the club. He spoke to the media for the first time. Paul Hurst from The Times was there. Hursty, tell us about Erik ten Hag, your first impressions. He says he wants to take the club back to winning big titles. What did you make of his character?
I thought he was very personable, very charming, came out. Then walked through the door and immediately kind of shook hands with everyone there, which might seem a minor thing, but, you know, some managers are quite reluctant to get on with the media, but I think he wants to get along with us and wants in. I think he probably knows that obviously the winning the kind of media battle is part of being a Man United manager with, when you think that the club think they've got 1.1 billion fans or followers across the world, then people are going to be hanging on every word that he says through the media and through social media, etc. So he wanted to make a good impression on us. And some of his answers were quite short. I got the impression that he held back on some aspects of what he, in particular, what he thought about the current United squad. He was asked about the performance in the 1-0 defeat at Palace, and he was obviously at Selhurst Park, and he didn't really say much on it. He said, "I will analyse the game." And, you know, anyone who was there or has seen that match would have known that seeing that United are, you know, it was a poor performance, and losing in that manner, you know, it's unacceptable. And obviously it's not been the first time that's happened. But yeah, he was clear and concise. I think he was the opposite of Ralf Rangnick, who was just like an open book in front of the media. That's probably what the club want. They probably don't want the manager calling out players or criticising players in the press. I think he wants a sort of harmonious United squad.
Do you think he's charismatic enough to galvanise Manchester United? Because you look at Guardiola and Klopp and even Tuchel and Conte, you know, there is something about their demeanour that seems to, I guess, energise might not be the wrong word, might be the wrong word at times, you know, but it does seem to transfer onto the pitch and around the club, their demeanour. You know, if Erik ten Hag's demeanour transfers around Manchester United, is that going to be a good thing when you compare them to the other big figures in the league?
I think you say that, but I remember Pep Guardiola's first press conference at Man City, and he was really You know, he wasn't very expressive at all. He was really nervous. He was like tapping his foot and banging the table and tapping the table, and he was really kind of withdrawn. So I don't think it was much different to what Ten Hag was like yesterday, on Monday, sorry. I think from speaking from the people that I've spoken to, he's a lot more comfortable talking off camera to people. And that is obviously the most important thing, isn't it, when it comes to the squad. I think they will feel his charisma in, you know, and feel his personality on the training pitch. He's not afraid to give his opinion. He's quite a straight talker, but he's also got that ability to sense when people need a lift and put his arm around their shoulder. And that's what he's got to work out over the next few weeks, I guess, which players need a bit of a lift and which of them need a kick up the backside.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're going to find out, aren't we, what he does with this squad. There were some questions asked about the future of Cristiano Ronaldo. How did he deal with those?
It was, again, very straightforward. He was asked, what will Cristiano Ronaldo bring to the team next season? And he replied, goals. That was it. And then he was asked, as a follow-up, will he be part of your plans next season? And he said, of course. So, yeah, he'll be there. He'll be the main striker next season. Just from talking to people around or who know Ten Hag, when I went to Holland last month to do a profile piece on him, he does like, you know, energetic players who press, and Ronaldo doesn't fit that bill. So, you know, he'll have to change his playing style, I guess, to satisfy the manager. He'll have to press. There's no getting out of it with Ten Hag. The problem that United have got, if they wanted to get rid of Ronaldo and if he wanted to go, you'd have to find someone who's willing to pay him, you know, £400,000-£500,000 a week, and there's no one out there who'll do that. He's got one more year left on his contract. That contract can be extended by another year. I think the club have got the option on that, but I don't think that'll happen. So I think he'll probably just have to, you know, stay with Ronaldo for another year, and then try and find a younger, more dynamic striker for the following season.
What about Harry Maguire's future as captain? I mean, I should be asking maybe about his future at the club as well, given his performances, but there has been an issue around leadership at Manchester United. Did he give any sort of indication as whether he would back Harry Maguire?
It was interesting on Maguire. He was very, very fulsome in his praise of Maguire, but he wouldn't confirm that he'd be captain next season. He was asked that directly, will Maguire be captain? And Ten Hag said, next season is a different season, but he did a great job. He's a great player and he's already achieved a lot. He's made a big contribution to Man United, so I'm looking forward to working with him. And there's no definitive response in there that says yes, he will have the armband next season, is there? And it was interesting that Ralph Rangnick was saying a few weeks ago that if it was up to him, he'd have a vote, and that's what they do at Man City. The players and the staff all vote for the captain. So it'd be interesting to see if Ten Hag goes down that route. But I agree that there is a lack of leadership there throughout the squad. So there's not that many alternatives, is there? You know, maybe De Gea, but he's not much of a shouter, is he? He's not much of an outgoing person. He's quite withdrawn. Bruno Fernandes is an outgoing person. He likes calling people out, but he's not had a great season. So will he have that respect of the dressing room? And then you know, you've got Ronaldo, who will, you know, may well be off at the end of next season. So there aren't a lot of long-term options there.
The other thing I wanted to ask finally about Erik ten Hag's press conference is expectations at Manchester United. I mean, this is something that I constantly try and dampen in my professional life and my private life. You know, people believing that Manchester United should be, you know, even next season, back up there, maybe not challenging for the title, but certainly more comfortable in terms of the Champions League places. Something I think is still a couple of seasons off. Maybe they'll reach top four next year, but I don't think they'll be comfortable. How does Erik ten Hag see the future as Manchester United boss? Because I think he said he wanted to win every game. That's the approach, as it should be at a club of that magnitude. But is that a realistic message to send out?
It was interesting. Some of his answers were quite, you know, quite positive about the future of the club, but it was a long term. That was a message for the long term. In terms of the short term, I don't think he expects United to be challenging Man City and Liverpool for the league next season, which is, realistic given that they were 35 points behind City. He said, I thought one of his most interesting quotes was, I'm not a dreamer, I live day by day. We have to recognise the situation that we're in. And they are, you know, they're light years behind City and United, City and Liverpool. So he's aware of that. He knows that getting top two next season is pretty much impossible. I agree with you. Top four, if they get top four next season, he's done a good job, and he should be praised for that if it happens, given how far they are back at the moment. But in terms of like long term, he did say that he hoped that someone, and obviously hopes that's United, will be able to break the domination of Liverpool and City. But yeah, I get the impression that he knows that it's not going to be a quick fix.
We shall see. We shall see. Paul Hurst, thank you for joining me in tempering those Manchester United expectations. Appreciate it. This weekend at Wembley, we will have the EFL Championship playoff final. I mean, it's usually, well, it was at one time billed as the £100 million game. I mean, I don't know, I think it's up to about £160 million game at this point in time. It is of huge significance to the future of whoever wins it. Huddersfield Town taking on Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest have not been in the top flight for 23 years. Huddersfield have had a couple of years away and transformed themselves. In fact, both clubs have transformed themselves under their managers in recent times. The Huddersfield boss, Carlos Corberan, and Steve Cooper at Nottingham Forest. And it should be a cracking game. Charlotte Dunker from The Times joins us to look ahead to it. Charlotte, let's start by talking about how these two sides are going to match up, shall we? As I say, really intriguing and high quality coaches in already short term careers who have already produced two very good sides this season. It's going to be tight.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think if you look at the way that both of the semi-finals went, Huddersfield just edging past Luton, and then Forest looked like after they should really have beaten Sheffield United probably about 5-0 after that first leg. But then United fought back in the second leg, and like you say, if based on what we saw in the semi-finals, it should be a tight contest. They both play similar systems, three at the back, heavily reliant on their wing backs to create those chances for them, and they've both got two goalkeepers as well who have been in fantastic form. So I think it is going to be a tight game. I expect Huddersfield, as we've seen them play this season, to not be cagey, but they like to eke out those 1-0 victories, those tight results, whereas the attacking threat that we've seen from Forest recently has been fantastic. But for me, I thought Forest looked a bit nervous at the City ground. I think that's what allowed Sheffield United to get back in the game, especially in the second half. So I think that might give Huddersfield confidence that they can definitely go to Wembley and make sure they're the ones that are back in the Premier League next season.
There are some good players to look out for in both of these teams. Mm-hmm. Who should we keep our eyes on in particular this weekend?
I think the two, I was talking about wing-backs there, and you've got Spence, who plays for Forest, and then you've also got Sorba Thomas, and maybe it's going to be a tale of the two of them to see who can be the most creative and get their team over the line. For me, I think Sorba Thomas has probably edged it over Spence over this course of the season. He's had 12 assists, 3 goals for Huddersfield, and also one of the big positives for him is that is that he signed a new long-term deal to keep him at the club till 2026. So if you look, there's obviously, they don't know what their fate is going to be, Premier League, Championship next season, but to have someone that has been so key for them in this campaign to have already committed themselves to keep with that project regardless of what happens, I think is really positive. And then if you look on Forest, I think Spence, there's been plenty of interest from him. I think Borough, probably, if they've got much sense, will look to cash in on him. There's lots of he's a high profile at the moment. He's been linked with many clubs, mainly Spurs at the moment is what I'm seeing. And he's just been called up for the England under 21s, which is justification for his displays this season. He's got 5 goals and 2 assists, so not as many as Thomas, but in the system that Forest play, he's definitely one of their strongest attacking threats. So it could be a tale of the wing backs at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, loads of those Forest players, I think they had three in the team of the season. But Joe Worrell, who was in it, there's interest for him, the centre-back. West Ham United, most interested. Brennan Johnson, who's been key all season. We've got to keep an eye on him as well. Nottingham Forest turned down $18 million in January for him. Now Leicester City, I mean, that was Brentford in January. Now Leicester City are being linked with him as well. He will have loads of suitors if Nottingham Forest aren't promoted. So will the manager, Steve Cooper, who's transformed things. Remember, Forest didn't win any of their first eight games of the championship season. Chris Hughton was sacked. They had one draw and seven defeats in those games. The fact that they came so close to automatic promotion was incredible, but it is huge for the club as a whole if Nottingham Forest can come up. It would be too for Huddersfield Town, who are punching, you know, well above what they've done. 20th last season. They're punching well above their weight in terms of finances, even though they've come down from the Premier League not too long ago as well. I think it's going to be a sensational final. It's difficult to call. Charlotte, if you had to predict anything happening this weekend, what would you go for?
I was confident before when I looked at the way the semi-final draws had gone. I thought Forest nailed on to go up. But having seen the way they performed in the second leg against Sheffield United, I don't know whether it was the nerves or the occasion that got to them. So I'm going to go for Huddersfield narrow victory.
Oh, wow. Okay. Look, it's going to be big. I think it might go down to penalties as well. Bree Samba, who saved the shootout penalties against Sheffield United, could be called on. Lee Nichols, who was the championship goalkeeper of the season in goal for Huddersfield as well. They could be called upon late on. We could have another great championship playoff final that goes right down to the wire. Charlotte Dunker, thank you for joining us from the Times. Thank you all for listening as well. We will, of course, react to that on Monday's podcast. Remember, if you want to rate us, leave us a review, then please do that. You can also subscribe to the Times and the Sunday Times right now. Sign up today. It's thetimes.co.uk/thegame. And we will see you very soon. Take care.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.